From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
A legislative resolution in support of Alaska's salmon troll fleet has cleared its first hurdle, although it has a way to go before seeing a full vote of the Alaska House and Senate. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
House Joint Resolution 5 was heard in the House Special Fisheries Committee on February 14th, Valentine's Day. Representative Hemshute used the day as a springboard to focus attention on Southeast trollers, whose livelihood has been jeopardized by a lawsuit in the federal court in Seattle.
I want to start by wishing everyone a happy Valentine's Day. And if there's one thing Alaskans love, it's our fishermen. So we're going to talk about some fishermen today.
Hemshute and co-sponsor Ketchikan Representative Dan Ortez are the only two Southeast Alaskans on the Special Fisheries Committee. Hemshute explained the significance of the troll fleet to the other members.
You'll find trollers in every community of Southeast Alaska. I don't know if there's a community without at least one troller, no matter how small the community. So it's a very important fishery for Southeast Alaska. And 85% of the trollers in the fleet are Alaska residents. So these are people who are hook and line fishing. So when they put their line in the water, it's a very sustainable fishery. They're going to pull up a salmon. This incredible homegrown fleet of fishermen doing the hard work that brings in about $85 million to our economy in Southeast Alaska is under attack, and they've been attacked by the Wild Fish Conservancy. There's a lawsuit that started in 2019, and this resolution is going to urge state and federal agencies to continue defending our trawlers.
Although the Southeast King Salmon Fishery is the target of the lawsuit, the defendant is the National Marine Fisheries Service, which oversees the management of the nation's commercial fisheries. In broad terms, the Wild Fish Conservancy argues that NIMS violated the Endangered Species Act when it failed to fully account for the impact of Alaska trolling on the food supply of a population of endangered killer whales in Puget Sound. Although experts believe that NIMS can correct this supposed error, it's now in the hands of a federal judge in Washington whether or not to shut down trolling for king salmon in Alaska until it's remedied. Other members of the committee tried to tease out a better understanding of the problem. Committee Chair Sarah Vance of Homer asked Alaska Trollers Association Director Amy Daugherty if harm to killer whales was an ongoing concern.
Has there been concerns about impact to the orcas prior to this?
Never. In fact, it's our understanding that every other orca population up and down the coast is healthy and, in fact, increasing, except for this localized Puget Sound population.
This is probably the most incongruent aspect of the lawsuit for trawlers, who regard themselves as an environmentally sensitive fishery. Shutting down commercial trolling for king salmon in Alaska may not have any effect at all on killer whales in Puget Sound. Sitka troller, environmentalist, and fisheries advocate Eric Jordan could barely contain his frustration.
This existential threat to close down our southeast troll fishery in a fundraising charade by the Wild Fish Conservancy is a brutal assault on us that won't save one orca. It is the most vicious, misguided assault I have witnessed in a lifetime of experience with fisheries conflicts.
Tad Fujioka, board chair of the Seafood Producers Cooperative in Sitka, argued that the Wild Fish Conservancy lawsuit failed to accurately trace the problem for Puget Sound's killer whales. If it did, the line would lead right back to Puget Sound.
The black salmon isn't really the problem that the southern resident killer whales face. If it was, we wouldn't see that the Alaskan and British Columbia orca pods growing so steadily. The real problem for southern residents is the pollution in Puget Sound. You know, there's 5 million people live in the Puget Sound area. With all the heavy pollution and road runoff, it makes the local fish toxic. The Washington Department of Health recommends that people eat no more than 2 servings of Puget Sound king salmon per month. And, of course, the local killer whales eat a whole lot more than that. And that's made them some of the most contaminated marine mammals anywhere in the world.
The House Special Fisheries Committee unanimously passed House Joint Resolution 5 out of committee. Its next stop is the Rules Committee, where it could be scheduled for a floor vote. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
In the end, the real problem for Southeast trawlers is that they are going against the Endangered Species Act. And they might want to refer to the case of the snail darter, a small freshwater fish that was discovered in the Little Tennessee River during the construction of the Tellico Dam in 1973. The dam was nearing completion when a University of Tennessee biologist discovered the endangered snail darter in an area of the river that would be inundated by the dam. A lawsuit was brought by environmentalists in that case, too. It asserted that the dam would essentially eliminate the snail darter's habitat and result in the extinction of the species. The project was halted as the case wound its way through the courts. It made it all the way to the Supreme Court, which recognized the Endangered Species Act as the preemptive law. They found no exceptions for figuring in the public interest or to continue programs and projects that are already well underway. They determined that the Endangered Species Act has priority over all other primary missions of all federal agencies. Congress reacted to this decision by creating the God Committee in 1978. It gets its name for its power to potentially destroy an entire species. In the case of a controversy like that of the snail darter, a committee of cabinet-level officials can exempt a specific project or program from the Endangered Species Act, even if it means the extinction of a species. Ironically, the God Committee ruled in favor of the snail darter. They found that the Tellico project was not well conceived in the first place, so the benefit to the public was small. In the end, Congress passed a specific amendment to the Endangered Species Act to exempt the Tellico project. Snail darters were relocated to another river, where they are now listed as threatened. So the reality is, only Congress or the God Committee can challenge the Endangered Species Act. Which brings us to the ruling made on August 8, 2022 by U.S. District Court Judge Richard A. Jones that found that the National Marine Fisheries Service, or NMFS, had violated the Endangered Species Act when it published the 2019 Southeast Alaska Biological Opinion, which is the primary scientific basis for the management plan for the commercial Chinook salmon trawlers in the Southeast. A suit brought by the Wild Fish Conservancy argued that NMFS had simply not done the required work to quantify the effect of removals of Chinook salmon on the southern resident killer whale population. They also maintained that NMFS had similarly not properly assessed the effects of a Chinook hatchery program. The WFC claimed that in this case, NMFS had failed to assess the risk of hatchery fish to wild Chinook salmon. The court agreed on both counts and sent the biological opinion back to NMFS to fix. But the question remained, should the troll fishery and hatchery programs continue while the biological opinion is repaired, or should they stop until the science is solidified? The state of Alaska and the Alaska Trollers Association do not dispute the deficiencies of the biological opinion. They agree that mistakes were made, but they have asked that both fisheries and hatcheries remain open while the biological opinion is fixed by NMFS. They argued that the economic harm of closing the fishery to fishermen and their communities would far outweigh the benefits to southern resident killer whales, and that fish from Chinook hatcheries are producing prey for the whales, thus mitigating the harm of the take by trawlers. The WFC argued that both the fisheries and hatchery program should be halted immediately, as both are based on bad science. In a report and recommendation on December 13, 2022, United States Magistrate Judge Michelle Peterson split her decision. She wrote that while the biological opinion is flawed for both the hatcheries and fisheries, the value of the hatchery fish as prey for the endangered whales outweighs the regulatory flaws, since the primary intent of the Endangered Species Act is to protect the species at risk. But for the Southeast trawlers, no such exemption exists. The Endangered Species Act is the biggest dog in the fight, and its manger is the endangered. This makes the legal grounds for appeal seem pretty thin, despite all public opinion. In the end, the hopes for Southeast trawlers for a fishery anytime soon might come down to the God Committee or an act of Congress. Among the only species as endangered as southern resident killer whales are northern right whales. The population of them that lives in Alaskan waters recently had its critical habitat expanded to cover an area stretching from Kodiak Island to the Bering Sea.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
A Kodiak-based seafood processing vessel has been fined over $200,000 by the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration. KMXT's Brian Venois reports it's the latest in a decade of health and safety violations aboard the vessel.
According to the U.S. Department of Labor, the investigation into the Pacific Producer, a 169-foot factory fishing vessel, began in July of last year while it was docked in Kodiak. Members of the U.S. Coast Guard in Seattle also assisted in the investigation in October. The feds cited the vessel for numerous sanitation violations, including murky brown water in the ship's drinking tanks, serving expired food to crew, and fish processing water leaking into dry food storage and dining areas. Other safety violations included electrical hazards such as damaged equipment, broken outlets, outlets near water, and exposed wires, as well as no forms of fire suppression. According to OSHA, Chris Saboris is the owner of East West Seafoods, which owns the Pacific Producer. Saboris is no stranger to OSHA violations. Similar problems have been found on the Pacific Producer in 2012, 2014, and 2018, the latter of which included an ammonia leak. According to a Department of Labor press release, federal inspectors have documented a decade's worth of, quote, disgusting and dangerous conditions aboard the vessel. This isn't the first time Saboris and East West Seafoods have faced fines either. The company was charged $50,000 and 5 years probation for dumping raw sewage and oily bilge water in Chiniak Bay in 2017. Saboris declined to comment when contacted by phone on Thursday. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.